For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
So, like, as a power move, he would stand sideways at urinals so that, like, people would be able to see it.
From the creators of 13, a podcast about books.
Not even piss king, just talked about piss all the time.
And speaking of porn,
prayer house,
wolf house.
Mostly about books.
Bridget and I are going to bring the scares, and Brooke's going to bring the smut.
Search for Edging wherever you listen to podcasts, or go to edgingthepodcast.com. Hey there. Thank you for joining us for this episode of 13. Before we get started, as always, we want to thank our new patrons. Leslie, Clarice, Reese Shepherd, Summer, and Vibolette. Thank you so much for your support. And welcome to the Pod Fam. If you'd like to hear your name before an episode, then you should check us out on Patreon. Just click the link in the show notes to learn more about perks like ad-free episodes, exclusive merch, and over 4 years of bonus stories. And without further ado, today's story is Thumb by Stetson Ray, featuring music by Brenda Fernandez. Are you ready? Sit back, turn down the lights, and now, on with the show.
There's a ghost who haunts a certain stretch of Highway 111 in Tennessee. Her name is Mindy Summers. She's been dead 38 years, but she doesn't know it. She's still trying to escape her stepfather, who liked her a little bit too much, or at least that's how the story goes. I've heard a few different versions over the years, but here's the most popular one. Mindy ran away from home and was walking down the highway at night trying to thumb a ride. That's when her stepfather caught up with her. He made her get in the car with him, but they never made it home. Somebody found the car upside down in a ditch near dawn. Mindy and her stepfather were dead. It looked like there'd been a struggle inside the vehicle before the crash. Now, Mindy's ghost walks the road near the place where she died, and she's still looking for a ride after all these years. It's a local legend, I guess. A story people tell when they want to feel scared. There's a photo of her hanging on the wall at my high school next to the trophy case. Mindy's wearing a black dress, a pearl necklace. She's smiling. No idea that her life is almost over. There's no telling how many kids have walked by that picture without giving it a second look. It's easy to forget that she was a real person, the same as me or you or anyone else. Half the boys that I go to school with say that they've seen Mindy's ghost. Some say they've picked her up. A few have claimed to spend some time with Mindy in the back seat of their cars. I know that none of that's true. If any of them really saw her, there's no way they'd get close enough to touch her. Don't get me wrong, Mindy's a pretty girl, but her eyes give her away. There's no life in them, just sadness and longing and misery. It almost hurts when she looks at you. The first time I saw her, I was 11 years old. My parents and I were driving on Highway 111 toward Livingston. I was in the back seat, looking out the window, when I spotted a girl wearing a baby blue nightdress standing on the side of the road. She had her thumb out, her skin reflecting the moonlight. By the time I realized what I was looking at, we'd passed her. I whipped around and tried to catch another look, but she was gone. I sat there, stunned, wondering if I should say anything. Finally, I spoke up. "We just passed a girl," I said. My father grunted, his eyes watching me through the rearview mirror. "There was a girl on the side of the road. We just passed her." My father let off the gas. Sitting in the passenger seat, my mother turned and said, "A girl?" "I think it was that ghost, that Mindy girl that people talk about." My father scoffed and sped back up. "That's not funny," my mother said, and turned back around. I was practically vibrating in my seat, my heart racing. "I'm serious. I saw her. I just saw Mindy Summers." "That's enough," my mother said. "You've been reading scary books before bed again, haven't you?" I swore again that I'd seen her, but my father cut me off and told me to drop it. I was dying to tell someone, anyone, what I'd seen. But I didn't have any choice but to wait until school on Monday. I kept the story to myself until after me and my friends were finished eating lunch. There was a lull in the conversation, so I took my chance. "You guys want to hear something crazy?" Everyone looked at me. I had their attention. "Me and my parents were on our way back from Cookeville the other night, and I saw Mindy Summers. She was standing on the side of the road holding out her thumb, hitchhiking, just like people always say." After saying it out loud, I realized it wasn't much of a story, and nobody seemed very impressed. "Did not," said one boy. "I did too. I looked right at her." "Whatever." A kid named Bryce spoke up, saying his uncle picked Mindy up one time and was going to give her a ride home, but she disappeared before they got there. A girl named Laura overheard us and chimed in, saying her dad saw Mindy once and she was covered in blood and her brains were falling out. It was quickly becoming a competition to see who could tell the best story or the best lie. But I needed them to know that I was telling the truth. I told them I was serious. I really saw her. But I had no evidence. And the other kids were eager to tell their own ghost stories. "I heard about a guy who tried to pick her up, but the motor in his car blew up as soon as he pulled over." Another kid said they heard about a truck driver having a heart attack just looking at her. Another kid said that his older brother had told him that if you run out of gas, Mindy will push your car all the way to the gas station for you. It went on. I sat there, wanting to pull my hair out and scream, but I had no choice but to sit and listen. I was just another kid with a story, and mine wasn't even that good. My father died about a year later. His death had nothing to do with Mindy Summers. He was pulled into a particle board compactor at the factory where he worked in Sparta. He died with his boots on. After the funeral was over, my mother had to go get a second job, even though she was pregnant with a dead man's baby. By the time my sister Samantha was born, I was a freshman in high school. I was always in trouble, and I laid out of classes often. My grades weren't good and my attitude was worse. My mother didn't have time to correct my behavior, and there was no one to steer me back onto the right path. But with the baby at home to take care of, nothing else seemed important. I learned how to change diapers and make bottles and do everything else that a parent is required to do. As my sister grew, my grades continued to decline. But I didn't care. All that mattered was my sister and my mother. For a year or so, things were all right. Samantha took her first steps and said her first words. I stopped going to school junior year so I could stay home with her full time while my mother went to work. The hurt from losing my father began to fade, and it seemed like everything was going to be okay. But then, my mother met him. His name was Bert Hatmaker. I hated him from the moment I first saw him. He had a thick neck and a perfectly round head with beady eyes. He usually stank like sweat and cigarettes and alcohol. My mother fell head over heels for him. And it wasn't long until Bert moved in with us and things started changing. He wanted everything to be done a certain way. And my mother didn't seem to mind. She waited on him hand and foot and even started talking like him, saying things like he said. In a matter of months, she transformed from a woman who would do anything for her family to a woman who would do anything to keep her scraggly boyfriend happy. I learned to hate her more than I hated him. But the worst part was how Bert looked at my kid sister. My mother pretended not to notice, but I know she did. I took it upon myself to protect Samantha. One night, after Bert and my mother returned home from a trip to Cookeville, me and Bert got into a screaming match. The two of us yelled until our faces were red, while Samantha stood at the top of the stairs crying. Bert yelled, "Hit me, big man, I dare ya," his stench washing over me. I wanted to. My heart was racing and my hands were already clenched into fists. My mother stepped between us.
"Leave, Nathan. I want you to leave right now."
I think I wanted to hit her worse than I wanted to hit him. "How dare you choose him over us?" Her face contorted through a few different expressions before it settled on hurt. Somehow, she'd found a way to make herself into the victim.
"Get out of my house," she said, her voice trembling.
I screamed,
"This isn't your house. It's Dad's house, and you've ruined it. You've ruined this whole family."
Tears glistened in her eyes, and her face turned red. Before she could say anything else, I stormed up the stairs and grabbed Samantha and carried her to her room and put her to bed. "Why are you and Mommy mad?" Samantha asked, her face wet with tears. She was 3 years old and as cute as she could be. I told her that sometimes adults get mad at each other. "Why?" she asked. I told her that they just do. I also told her that I had to go, but that I'd be back as soon as I could. She asked me not to leave her, and I told her that I never would. I wiped her face with the sleeve of my shirt and kissed her forehead. I told her that I'd come back as soon as I could, and until I do, I told her to always keep her door locked at night. It broke my heart to do it, but I left Samantha there alone with them. I knew that if I tried to take her, things would get even worse. I packed a bag and hit the road in my father's old work truck, an F-150 that burned oil and sounded like a hurricane. I drove aimlessly for hours, wringing my hands on the steering wheel and mumbling all the things that I wish I'd said to Bert under my breath. I unscrewed the cap of the bottle I'd swiped from Bert's stash. Despite his many flaws, there was one thing I liked about Bert. He didn't seem to notice or care when I grabbed some of his booze. The whiskey burned, but I kept at it, and it wasn't long until the bottle was empty. I found myself cruising down Highway 111 in a stupor with the radio blaring. I had nowhere to go and no one to take me in. I had to come up with a plan to get Samantha out. And then I nearly ran her over. I swerved just in time, but I couldn't keep the truck off the guardrail. Sparks flew and metal crunched I stomped the brake pedal and steered off the guardrail, coming to a stop on the shoulder. I looked in the rearview mirror, but I didn't see anyone behind me. Then, the passenger door popped open, and a girl slid inside my truck.
Thanks for stopping. I really need a ride.
It was Mindy Summers, the girl that I'd seen when I was 11. She hadn't aged a day. She was wearing the same blue nightdress. She was pale and pretty. Her eyes were two bulbs of glowing neon turquoise. I'd never seen anything so blue. The engine idled. I looked at her, my mouth hanging open. Mindy narrowed her eyes.
Are you gonna give me a ride or not?
I said, sure, of course, and pulled out onto the highway. As we rode in silence, I considered a few possibilities. Had I blacked out and I was hallucinating? Or maybe I had a concussion from hitting the guardrail? Either way, I had to say something. Anything. So, do you, hitchhike much?
No. This is my first time.
Where are you heading?
I don't know. I just needed to get away.
Mindy was sitting perfectly still, her body rigid, her knees tightly pressed together. I asked her if she was running away from home. She glanced at me and brushed a strand of hair behind her ear.
I guess there's no reason to lie. That's exactly what I'm doing.
I wanted to say, you're running from your stepfather, right? But I was afraid of what might happen if I did.
I couldn't stand living with my stepfather anymore. He's unbearable.
I told her that I knew what that was like, that my mom's boyfriend is a total dipshit. For a moment, I forgot who Mindy was. It was easy. She didn't look like she was dead or anything. Then she turned toward me, and I remembered. There was so much fear and regret in her eyes that it made my heart hurt just to look at them.
So are you from around here?
She asked it, and waves of chills rippled across my skin.
Yeah, Livingston.
Me too! How come I've never seen you at school?
I thought, because you're dead. Because you've been standing on the side of that road for almost 40 years. But I told her I didn't know. She was still looking at me, and I could feel myself melting. The adrenaline from hitting the guardrail was wearing off, and something inside me was starting to come unfurled. I wasn't sure how much longer I could keep driving and pretending that Mindy wasn't a ghost.
So do you have a girlfriend?
No. Do you? I mean, do you have a boyfriend?
She giggled and said no, and scooted a little closer to me.
Do you have anyone to stay with?
Not really.
I could feel her looking at me again, searching me. I felt her grow nearer. I realized that I could see my breath. It became a fog as it left my mouth.
You know, we could run away together.
I glanced at her, and I said,
yeah, I guess we could.
She inched closer. There was maybe a foot of seat between us.
What's your name?
Nate. And, you're Mindy, right? Mindy Summers?
She smiled.
So you have seen me at school?
I thought again. Yeah, I've seen the picture they put up of you after you died. But I just told her.
No, I just... Well, okay, yeah. I guess I've seen you around.
She slid closer. My heart was clicking in my ears. My knuckles were white on the steering wheel.
If you know me, then how come you've never introduced yourself?
Just shy, I guess.
You're cute.
Her voice was in my ear. Her body was touching mine. Her skin was cold and humming with energy. One of her hands rested on my knee, and the other was on the steering wheel.
I'm glad you picked me up. I've been waiting out there a long time.
I wanted to say something, but a lump had formed in my throat. Mindy crawled into my lap, positioned herself between me and the steering wheel. There was a curve ahead of us, and it was coming up fast. I put both hands up on the wheel and pulled with all my strength, but nothing happened. The truck stayed true.
Mindy, I can't turn. You have to let go of the wheel.
What's wrong? Don't you think I'm pretty?
I went for the brakes, but Mindy cut me off. She used one leg to block the brake pedal and the other to stomp the gas. I let go of the steering wheel and tried to push her away, but she was immovable. Her skin was so cold that it burned my hands. A sheet of ice formed on the windshield. I yelled,
"Mindy, please,"
and gave the wheel a final tug, but it was no use. Time was up. We'd reached the curve and we were going at least 90 miles an hour. I made a final desperate attempt to escape. I grabbed the door handle, fully intending to throw myself out of the moving truck, but Mindy slapped my hand away, her face only inches from mine. She smiled as we sailed off the road. The last thing I remember were her eyes, blue and blazing like fire. I woke up in the intensive care unit at a hospital in Nashville a week later. My mother and sister were at my bedside. Bert wasn't.
"Easy," my mother said. "You were in an accident, but everything's okay." "Where is she?"
I asked, my words coming out slurred. Mom looked confused.
"Samantha? She's right here, honey."
"No, Mindy. What happened to her?" I heard another voice.
"It's okay. Confusion is normal at this point."
I blinked at the person standing on the other side of my bed, a doctor from the looks of him. He explained what had happened and told me that I was lucky to be alive. My injuries were extensive. I had 11 broken bones, internal bruising, and my brain had swelled while I slept. 7 days I'd spent in a medically induced coma, and it was hard to believe so much time had passed in an instant. My mother told me that I was alone when they found me. I decided not to say anything else about Mindy. Later that evening, before my mother and Samantha went home, I begged for her not to leave Samantha alone with Bert and made her promise. She didn't seem hurt or surprised by my request. After they were gone, I laid in bed, looking at my bandaged hands, burned but healing. Every time I closed my eyes, I saw Mindy's face. I slept with the TV on at night. It was another week before the doctors sent me home. Bert didn't fake being happy to see me. I'm sure he wished that I'd have died. He stayed away from me, though, which was good because I could barely walk and I couldn't do anything to stay away from him. Per my request, my mother moved Samantha's bed into my room. During the day, while Bert and my mother were working, Samantha took care of me as best as she could. She couldn't do a lot, but she tried. Odd as it may sound, those were some of the best days of my life. Me laying there with Samantha on the floor beside my bed, coloring or playing with dolls or talking nonstop. We must have watched every animated movie ever made. I got to know all the Disney princesses very well. My mother began to seem more like herself, too. She'd come to my room after work and we would talk, just the three of us. She never came out and said it, but I could tell that she was getting tired of Bert. But I guess she still loved him, and talking to her about getting rid of him was like talking to a mannequin. My school agreed to let me come back even though I was a year behind. But I was worried what might happen to Samantha when I began attending school in person again. Sometimes Bert played hooky from his job. Bert had to go. And since my mother wasn't going to do it, I decided that it was up to me. I did some research while I was trapped in bed. I found out that a certain stretch of Highway 111 has more accidents than any other, and that men are much more likely to be the ones who wreck. It's nearly 10 to 1, male to female. Most of the accidents happen at night, and they're nearly all fatal. I came up with a plan. After I healed up enough to walk, I sold most of my possessions and bought a car for $1,200. It was a total piece of junk, but it ran. I started cruising down 111 every night. I always took Samantha with me. She usually fell asleep shortly after we left. I was looking for Mindy. It wasn't long until I saw the dead girl again. She tried to flag me down, but I steered around her and kept going. When I got home, I told Bert what I'd seen. Mentioned that I'd seen a pretty young girl standing on the side of the highway. Bert had been drinking, same as every night. He seemed very interested in what I had to say. He was from a little town down in Alabama. He hadn't heard the local legends. He didn't know any better. After I took Samantha upstairs and tucked her in, I stood in the doorway and listened to Bert tell my mother that he was going out for a pack of smokes. Hearing his truck pull out of the driveway was one of the best sounds I ever heard. I climbed in my bed and lay there smiling. Samantha, snoring in her bed beside mine, safe and sound. My mother received a phone call early the next morning. Someone had found Bert's truck overturned on the side of the highway. It took firefighters 2 hours to cut his body out of the wreckage. Sure, my mother cried, but not like she had when my father died. I know she was glad that Bert was gone, even if she wouldn't say it. His funeral was closed casket. I was told that the crash had nearly torn his head off. It was just as well. Bert was never much to look at, anyways. School's going all right. I'm still behind, but it's not a big deal. Things are different now. Things are better. I don't care if I have to walk with a limp for the rest of my life. I have my mother and my sister, and that's all that matters. I see Mindy's picture every day. She's smiling. A glimpse of her just a week or so before she died. She looks mostly the same as she did that night in my truck. And I guess she always will. I wonder how long they'll leave that picture hanging there. I wonder how long she'll spend on the side of that highway, trapped in purgatory. I wish that there was something I could do to help her. But make no mistake about it, I avoid Highway 111 at night. Sure, I appreciate Mindy for taking care of Bert, but I'm done giving rides to hitchhikers. Let the dead find another way to get around.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of 13. If you like what you heard, stop what you're doing and leave a 5-star rating and review wherever you listen to podcasts. This has been Thumb, written by Stetson Ray, narrated by Ian Epperson. Brooke Jeanette was Mindy Summers. Featuring music from the album Faith Keeper by Brenda Fernandez. Editing and sound design by Brooke Jeanette. Additional assistance from Bridget Freeman. If you like the music you're hearing right now and what you heard throughout the episode, then check the show notes for a link to this album and the rest of Brenda's work. Our producer-level patrons are Tattooed Fox, Rhiannon, Sean Geary, Anthony Diaz, Amy Harper, Jackie Kay, Chantel Payne, Nick, Jake R., Emily Toll, and Kozumine. Thank you so much for your support. Click the link in the show notes to learn more about joining us on Patreon. And check us out on social media. You can find us most places under Pod 13. And you can join the Facebook group for 13 Podcast. Just look for the logo and you'll find links in the show notes. If you'd like to submit a story to be performed on the show, or if you'd like to contact us about anything else, you can get in touch at info@13podcast.com. You'll find submission guidelines and other info on our website, 13podcast.com. And you can find that in the show notes too. Bridget Freeman is waiting just around that bend. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon.
This old tired tale begins to make no sense at all. Together or not at all is what the wise people say. But I gotta have the guts to look at what I've done. My default is to run. But I'm looking at the pain I caused, 'cause I was just too scared.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.